Today we're talking books on the Monocle Arts Review, and on hand to pick some highlights from the week's literary releases is Kathy Rensenbrink, writer and contributing editor to The Bookseller. On the show today, we'll discover how Jane Eyre has inspired a selection of female authors in a new anthology of short stories, we'll explore a lust-fueled gay relationship set in Bulgaria's capital city, and we'll investigate the murder of a boy through the eyes of his grieving mother. That's all to come on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Stay tuned. Our first novel today is set in Sofia, the Bulgarian capital. Here we meet an American teacher who is confronted with his own fraught history after he has a number of homosexual encounters with a young hustler called Mitko. The title of the book is What Belongs to You, and it's written by Garth Greenwell. Kathy, welcome to the show. This is Greenwell's debut novel, but before this he wrote a novella called Mitko. What's the relationship between this work and its shorter predecessor?
Well, I haven't read Mitko, the novella, but as I understand it, that novella was the source for the first third of this book. So I think it's slightly edited, but it's the same sort of idea. And then in the novel, then there's a second third which takes us back into the narrator's past, growing up in America, his relationship with his father, and then it goes back again to Bulgaria and the relationship with Mitko. And I mean, I can completely see that the first bit does stand alone as a novella, but then of course the whole is much richer for the context, I think.
Is there a difference in style? I mean, can you kind of notice that one was written a few years earlier and then he moves on?
No, I don't think so. I certainly didn't, because I think I read a very early copy, so I really like reading without context, actually. As a professional reader, it's a great boon if you can read without knowing these things. So I read not looking for it and didn't see it. Maybe if I read looking for clues,
right, exactly.
I might. But no, I thought it all hangs together beautifully. I think it's a very slender novel. And obviously novellas are short, but even in the three parts, it's still very slim, but a slim masterpiece, I'd say.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the relationship between Mitko and this unnamed narrator.
I do like an unnamed narrator, I must say. It always then makes it difficult. So I like it as a reader, then as somebody who speaks about books, it always makes it difficult to talk about, because you're always saying the narrator,
right.
Whereas it'd be slightly easier to be saying Bob this and Bob that. So the narrator is American, is in Europe. I think one of the fascinating things about this book is it ever so slightly kept reminding me of things. Not at all that I mean it's derivative, but so in the sense of an American in Europe, it reminded me of lots of novels, or even just anyone in Europe. It reminded me of Goodbye to Berlin for quite a while, Isherwood. Anyway, so the narrator meets Mitko, who he is sort of fairly instantly entranced by. And then the whole novel really is about this relationship and what... And as a reader, you can't really work out what this relationship is, and the narrator can't work out what the relationship is, and we're not sure that Mitko knows what the relationship is. He says at one point to the narrator, "You're my friend." He's continually trying to reassure him that the narrator wants to feel different from Mitko's other clients, and sometimes you feel that he is and sometimes you feel that he isn't, and then Mitko demands things for him. At one point Mitko says, "Well, you know you're special to me because I don't steal things from you." It's unbelievably sad. Another thing it slightly reminded me of was Of Human Bondage by Somerset Maugham, which is one of my utterly favourite novels, and it's intensely heartbreaking. And when I read that novel, it was the first time I felt I'd seen in literature what I had already sadly worked out for myself in my personal life, was that unrequited love is not less painful when you know that the object of your love is unworthy. And I think that's what Maugham does in Of Human Bondage, and I think that's what's really happening here. So even though we may see that Mitko is not a worthy love object, you're not sort of rooting for them to get together and for there to be any happy ending.
He's a bit kind of rough around the edges, isn't he, to say the least, I guess.
Well, he is, and it's extremely sad. And there's this very striking bit where the narrator is looking at a picture of Mitko from 2 or 3 years ago, and he looks entirely different, much healthier. He's an unappealing prospect, and he lives in a country where the economy's not in a good place. There's no real future for people. There's never really an alternate way for Mitko to be other than turn tricks for money. You don't feel there's another way for him to be. It's not a cheerful novel. You don't feel there's lots of paths that the characters could choose to take if they weren't taking the ones that they're on. But yes, it is. I just thought it was brilliant.
You mentioned there the obviously the setting of Sofia. It's an interesting setting. It's a city that's kind of struggling to let go of its communist past a bit, and it does feel a bit bleak. How do we know that why is our American protagonist here, and how does this setting play? What role does it play in the novel?
As a teacher, and I think fiction often works when you've got a stranger in a strange land. And it just does, apart from anything else, because if nobody is new to a place, then it sounds very artificial when people start describing it to each other. And I think that's one of the fun things about reading books. Obviously, you don't tend to notice it in a novel that's as well done as this one, but that's why books like this work, because otherwise you have two Bulgarians walking down the road trying to artificially tell us, the reader, what it's like to live in Sofia in a particular time. And time is interesting because I think it's sort of supposed to be happening now-ish, in the now, but again, it has this odd, weird, timeless quality. So on the one hand, there's social media, you know, so Mitko uses internet dating sites to hook up with clients. But on the other hand, it has that thing you feel, I think, in former communist countries, where you just feel that the time stop at some point when this, and then all these the higgledy piggledyness of the buildings.
It's a novel that's kind of attracted a lot of attention, and Publishers Weekly cited it as the first great novel of 2016. Are you kind of in the same camp? Do you think this is sort of the first great novel we've seen this year?
I think it's a wonderful novel, and I'm very interested in him and his career and what he goes on to write next. And I think there's lots of interesting things about this. I think one of the things actually that pleases me as a human being is the way that not long ago somebody would have talked of this in terms of being a great gay novel. I really like the fact that now it just gets to be a great novel.
Right.
Happens to be a great gay novel. but it's a great novel. Everybody's reading it now. And I just think that when you think, when I get distressed at the state of the world, I do think in some way gay rights and the way people talk about that has really changed.
What Belongs to You is already out in America, published by Farah, Strauss and Giroux, and will be out on April the 7th here in the UK, published by Picador. Next on today's reading list is The Mother by Yvette Edwards. A courtroom drama unfolds as Marcia attends the trial of the boy accused of her son Ryan's murder. The potential perpetrator is Tyson Manley, a character that everyone is scared of, including his own girlfriend, Sweetie, who might hold the answers that Marcia needs to get justice for her son's death. Kathy, how is this story told, first of all, and does it take place largely in the courtroom?
Well, it's in the house, in the house of... So the boy who's been murdered is called Ryan, and his parents are called Marcia and Lloydie. So a lot of it takes place in their house, opens in their house, and a lot of it is from Marcia's perspective as she thinks through, you know, what her experience is going to be. So we follow her experience. She wakes up. It's a very sad book. She goes into Ryan's bedroom, which is still as it was before he was killed, and kind of strokes his duvet in a bit that I found very sad. She goes to court. That, you know, there's a moment when the photographers are trying to get her picture. That's a very powerful moment because the police liaison officer says something like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I won't let that happen again. It must be a slow news day." And then Marcia's sister said, "Well, I don't think a 16-year-old boy getting killed for no reason is not news, you know." And it's very interesting in that way. So it really does. It works very much as a not quite thriller, as a courtroom drama. But equally, there's a load of stuff going on here. One of the things I find really interesting about crime, or sort of nearly crime novels, I'm hesitating to call this a crime novel because it has got so much other stuff going on with it, is the way they can really be, I think, vehicles for social comment in a way that straight novels find it more difficult to do. And that's one of the things that's very good about this book. That's all very lightly handled.
What is the social commentary? I mean, do you think, is there a message behind it?
Well, it's very interesting. So at one point, and again, one of the clever ways the novel does this, so as the reader, you don't feel hit over the head with it. So Marcia has a sister, and it's the sister that always notices things. So it's the sister that says, "This is such a whitewash," because everybody in the court, apart from the defendant and Marcia and her sister, is white. The sister makes lots of comments about the jury selection process and how that goes, and how the jury that is selected looks nothing like what the people on their street would look like. So I think that's really interesting. And then I think so much of what is in this book is, we read this in the newspapers all the time. We read about gang violence. We read about the ways in which young women are pressured to do things, not least provide alibis and give evidence. And I very much enjoyed this book as a book, as a story in its own right, but I also felt I enjoyed the way in which those issues were put into play, I thought, in a very sort of wise and sensitive way.
And how sure are we kind of throughout the book that, that Tyson Manley is the killer? Is there a sense of suspense, I guess, surrounding this question? Does that keep us hanging on?
Yeah, very much so. It's a complete page turner in that sense. You very quickly really care about Marcia, the mother, and you really want her to find out the truth. And as the reader, you want to know the truth. And there is suspense, but again, it's quite sensible. One of the reasons why thrillers irritate me is when the denouement makes no sense. You know, or the story isn't very good because you've got eight potential people in play. You know, because again, with the conventions of a detective novel, the solution can't, the person who, the, you know, the murderer can't arrive in chapter 25. So that's why you always have so many characters clogging up the place. So this is very simple and streamlined. But I do think it definitely does, it does page turn. It really keeps you moving through it.
The Mother will be released on the 7th of April by Mantle and on the 10th of May in America, where it will be published by Amistad. Our final book today is a collection of short stories inspired by Charlotte Bronte's classic, Jane Eyre. You might recognise the line, "Reader, I married him," from the 19th century novel, and it's now the title of this anthology that's been edited by Tracy Chevalier. Cathy, what sort of stories has this one line triggered?
Oh, this is just lovely. And I think if you're a Bronte nerd or a Jane Eyre nerd, you'd very much enjoy this, but I think you'd also enjoy it even if you weren't. The stories are of exceptional quality, and that's something I don't think you can always be sure of in a kind of a themed collection, but they're just wonderful. And they're a really interesting, it's a stellar list of authors, but it's a really interesting range of stories, because obviously the brief was quite loose, I think. So some of the stories directly relate to Jane Eyre. So there's a story from the perspective of Grace Poole, there's a story from the perspective of Mr. Rochester, but equally lots of them, there's a much lighter connection. Sometimes it's just the line itself, "Reader, I married him." So there's a couple of stories about marriage being the only way to be in former times, and actually you'd really rather have been shacked up with a, as a woman, you'd have been rather shacked up with your friend who had to remain your friend, it had to remain secret. So again, so there's lots. There's contemporary stories, historical ones. There's a really interesting vogue at the moment for this sort of inspired by writing. So there's the Hogarth Project, which is inspired by Shakespeare's plays, and the Austen Project from Borough Press, which is Jane Austen's. So, and there is a variable quality, I think, but I find this really works. Possibly because the "Reader, I Married Him" is the jump-off line rather than them supposed to be being retellings. I think retellings are hard. I've been thinking about it a lot because another novel coming out soon is Eligible by Curtis Sittenfield, which is a retelling of Pride and Prejudice. And I think she actually does a really good job, but it made me think about why retellings are difficult, which is that if somebody's read the novel, then that it can be a bit irksome kind of knowing what's coming in terms of plot twists.
Right, I can imagine.
So I think inspired by is much better than a retelling of.
Right. And which of these stories were kind of your highlights? Which ones really spoke to you?
Well, I loved... Tessa Hadley, who's one of my favourite writers, and I always feel she should be more lauded than she is, though she did win a nice fat prize recently, which was lovely. She has the first story in the collection, and that's quite a sort of a funny, sweet one about a slightly peculiar bohemian wedding. So the narrator's mother is getting married, and then there's a bit of a cast change at the end, but that's very funny. And Sarah Hall, who's another writer who I really like, who I think writes very well about sex and desire, actually, and her novel The Wolf Border was very good last year. This is a very contemporary story. It's about former lovers who bump into each other at the Lido. So I liked that one. But loads of them are great. Linda Grant's done one called The Mashup, which is about a couple trying to work out how to get married when her parents are kind of three times a year Jews, and he's from Iran and keeps insisting that he's Persian and not a Muslim, and they need to find some sort of way to have a wedding that won't offend everybody and will make everybody feel that they have in some way been involved. So there's just loads of good stuff going on in this. It's great fun.
Reader, I Married Him is out on April the 7th, published by HarperCollins, and be sure to tune in to meet the writers this Saturday at 1500 hours UK time, when Georgina Godwin will be joined in the studio by Tracy Chevalier. I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Cathy Rensenbrink. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to talk film with Karen Krasanovich, but for now, thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.